understand.
They're in session, but they were a minute ago.
Are they in session?
This is just the draft.
I know you are.
Laura brought us.
They started to work on the summary.
So.
The Committee on Elections will come to order. A quorum is present. Senator Erickson Ropes, welcome to the committee. We have Senate File 663 before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have Beth Frazier here with me as well. We're bringing back a bill to you for a little bit of tune-ups. This is a bill that I've been working on for 2 years, and it passed last year. It's called Minnesota's Overseas Voting Act. And just to give you a little bit of quick history, the idea was brought to us by members of the Pentagon as a way to create a process that would allow any citizens that are living overseas to be able to participate fully in elections. And there have been problems, as you know, with ballots not making it in on time and being counted and that sort of thing. So for a couple of years, we worked with the Pentagon, with the House, with the governor, and all parties, and came up with a bill that was finally passed last year. So we're back before you now, just making a couple changes. Most of them are just sort of minor technical things. There is one big policy change, and if you have the bill in front of you, it begins on 1.12. We're talking about making sure that anyone living overseas who has a Minnesota residence is able to vote. But we also want to include people who have never resided in the U.S., but who have family connections to Minnesota. For example, children of missionaries or grown children of career military folks that have spent a lot of time overseas traveling with their families who may never have lived in Minnesota. They might have come back for summer vacation. They might have been back in the state visiting, but actually don't have a residence here themselves, that they would be allowed to be included participate in voting in Minnesota. They actually have to pay federal taxes as a U.S. citizen overseas, and right now there's not a mechanism for any of these folks to be able to participate in state elections. So here you have U.S. citizens whose parents or grandparents may have lived in Minnesota. They're strong family attachments. They've never been here themselves. They're U.S. citizens. They can vote in U.S. elections.
No.
I'm sorry,
Senator.
Okay, maybe Beth better correct me here.
Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. Right now, these U.S. citizens are completely disenfranchised. They can't vote in any election. So this legislation would allow them to vote in federal elections.
Okay. Thank you very much for correcting me. So that is one piece.
Senator Erickson Ropes,
yes.
Just 1 second, please. Senator Rest has a question.
Senator Erickson Ropes or Ms. Frazier, is that language exactly like it was in last year's bill?
Ms. Frazier?
Or in the...
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, it's slightly different, but it's the same concept.
Ms. Frazier, the governor has indicated he doesn't like that provision. What is slightly different that might make a difference to the governor, do you
Ms.
think?
Frazier.
Or will this be just something that we decide that we're going to disagree on
Madam Chair,
at this point and hope to convince him otherwise?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Rest, that latter piece is correct.
I see. Okay.
I believe he did not like the language last year. We feel like we have a good case to make sure that everyone who's a U.S. citizen living overseas has the opportunity to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't like that language. It was stricken last year, so I think it may just simply be a point of disagreement.
Okay. I'm fine with it, but.
Okay. Thank you. And Madam Chair, then just to continue, the rest are just minor changes. Since we have gone to electronic mail, we changed some of the language to attachments as opposed to mail or anything requiring postage. We've also dropped some language referring to social security number, because when you're in the military, your military ID number is your social security number. So we want to make sure that number isn't being bandied about and putting people at risk.
Let's see. Madam Chair.
Yes.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson-Robes, did you say that this was just for voting in federal election? They wouldn't be able to vote in the local state elections.
They would also additionally be able to vote. I will let Beth answer that question once more.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, they would only be allowed to vote in federal elections.
And Ms. Frazier, why is that? Or what's the rationale behind just federal elections, not state constitutional offices, for example?
Madam Chair, federal law and state law allow individuals who used to reside in Minnesota but now permanently reside overseas to only vote in federal elections. Since these individuals have never resided in Minnesota, it seems to make sense to afford the same privilege to them of being allowed to elect the president and Congress, but not to influence state and local elections.
Senator Ress.
Madam Chair, and I think, I don't mean to be cynical, but people that live overseas in this category do not have the benefit of all the local campaigns that the rest of us have, whereas their knowledge of a single candidate running for president or U.S. senator or representative in Congress, they do. I mean, the assumption is they do.
Senator Erickson-Robes, did you want to continue to describe the bill, or were you done?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Getting into Section 4, same sort of update of language. Instead of mailing appropriate ballots, we're talking about transmitting them, because it does have to do with electronic. So you'll see references from mailed shifting over to transmissions. And then on the last page at 3.10, the county auditor is not going to be required to provide return postage to voters when they have electronic ballots.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Ms. Frazier, would you like to add testimony?
I have a question.
Senator Pappas?
So I'm sorry, I must not have been listening. I'm sorry I wasn't paying attention. Because I'm not understanding, what are we actually trying to change here? Oh, I know. Even if they've never resided in the U.S., if their parents maintain residence, that's the change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also that the Secretary of State's office would be allowed to submit a ballot to them electronically instead of by mail.
Since I have three daughters who are permanently not U.S. residents, I don't think they've ever voted in a U.S. election.
But they lived here.
It's true. They did live here, so they would have been eligible.
They would have been eligible.
Okay. But their children who are U.S. citizens.
That's who this applies to.
This applies to them.
Right.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we actually made the change last year so that we can transmit ballots to voters electronically. So most of the bill is on conforming language that we didn't change last year. But we did, for the first time this past year, email ballots to voters. They had to print them out and mail them back. But we did that, and it was very successful.
About how many ballots, do you know about roughly how many ballots you sent out that in that manner this last election?
Madam Chair, about 16,000 UACAVA ballots were sent out, and a little more than half of them, I think about 7,500 of them, were emailed.
Great. And Madam Chair, I think the success rate returns went up like 400% or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very successful template for helping democracy.
It certainly helps with some of the time delays that can happen when mailing Absolutely. Ballots abroad. Senator Rest?
I just had a question about the write-in absentee ballot, where you're striking the language, a state write-in absentee ballot, and instead just saying may use the federal write-in absentee ballot. And this does not apply to the people named in Subdivision 2, of 203B16, but in subdivision 1. Who are those people?
Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, in subdivision 1, the people named are those in active duty military and their dependents, as well as Minnesota citizens who are temporarily overseas. So they're allowed to vote in all races, local, state, and federal. And last year we passed this language allowing them to use a write-in absentee ballot. And the Pentagon had suggested that we add a state write-in absentee ballot, but as we went to implement this language, we realized that voting assistance officers around the world and consulates all have the federal write-in absentee ballot, and trying to get them to also have a Minnesota-specific one didn't seem to make a lot of sense and might add confusion. So we're just limiting it to use of the federal write-in.
So, ballot. Madam Chair, Ms. Frazier, this was a change that we made last year that we're now changing back for the sake of less confusion.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, the important policy change that we made last year is allowing these UACAVA voters to use this absentee ballot to vote in state and local elections.
Right. Okay.
So we're just deleting a requirement that we have a state ballot, but continuing to allow use of a write-in ballot for voting in all elections.
Is there any... Oh, Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Madam Chair, I'll just report to the committee that there's 16 other states that have already gone ahead and adopted the language having to do with citizens never having resided in the U.S. And I can provide the committee with a list of those 16 states if you're interested.
Oh, we do have a copy of that. Thank you. Senator Olstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Erickson-Ropes, do you know how many people this would affect? Do you have any estimates on how many people this?
I believe the number of, according to the Pentagon, the number of overseas Minnesotans or Minnesotans living overseas is about 96,000.
Who have never lived in the United States?
No.
That would just be
that
a portion.
That would be the total number of Minnesotans living overseas.
Madam Chair, Major. Senator Rolstein, our estimate is that there are probably about 100 children of former Minnesotans who this would affect. Apparently, 3 of them have their mother in the room.
I just figured out, Madam Chair. I actually figured out that only one of my daughters would qualify because she went to Israel from Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But my other daughters, one went to Israel from New York, and one went to Israel from California. So we'd have to see if they had similar laws.
Right.
They'd have to vote through those states. Or their children would have to vote through those.
Grandchildren. States. Yeah. Grandchildren.
So we could change this to see if a grandparent maintained residence. And they would qualify.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on Senate File 663? Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 663 be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much,
Madam
Chair.
Thank you, Senator, very much. The next bill we have is Senate File 531.
Madam Chair, we're waiting for an amendment, so I don't know if that's arrived yet. Mr. Botter.
Do you want to do your bill?
Do you want to do my bill first?
Whatever you want.
Why don't we do my bill?
Sure. Yeah. Let's keep on moving.
Madam Chair, I do have a small oral amendment to make first.
Senator Steben, you want to tell us where that is, and then we will take it up.
There was just a drafting error on line 1.7. Delete the first phrase after subdivision 1.7. So delete the words unable to go to polling place, semicolon.
Just strike that?
Yes.
Senator Sieben moves to strike on line 1.7 after the first period, unable to go to polling place, semicolon. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a pretty simple bill to explain. It would allow for absentee voting without excuse in Minnesota. I think the first thing I'd like to point out is 28 other states already allow for this, including the states that border us, Iowa, Wisconsin, and both Dakotas. I think that when you had the first hearing and we heard testimony from the city of Roseville, I'll remind members that Roseville election officials said that up to more than 20% of residents were voting by absentee during the last election. And I think that, as we heard in the testimony, perhaps senior citizens and other people want the assurance that they will be able to vote. And so sometimes perhaps may speculate that they'll be away from their polling place even though they're not sure they are going to be. So it seems like the numbers show that more and more people are voting by absentee ballot in the previous elections. And, of course, we see with the recount that is occurring right now in the U.S. Senate race that many of the problems with ballots that are in question are those that were cast by absentee. So I think it's prudent for the state to try to assure Minnesotans that they can vote by absentee if they would like to, and they do not need an excuse, since it seems to me that that is what many Minnesotans are doing now. So with that, I think I'll first turn it over to Ms. Frazier from the Secretary of State's office.
Ask a question first, Senator Sieben. We know that people do this on the chance that they may be out of the precinct and they want to be sure not to vote. Some people do it because they don't want the hassle of election day lines, and they, even though they're going to be at home in their precinct. What's the penalty if someone came after you? I mean, is this a crime if you do it right now? And I'm assuming if it is, because it's not specified, that it's a misdemeanor. Is that correct?
That's what I was assuming it would be, but Ms. Frazier
Answer. And maybe somebody can refresh for those of us who aren't on Judiciary or Public Safety, what's the penalty for a misdemeanor?
90 days, up to 90 days.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty or Ms. Frazier?
I believe it's actually a felony.
Where does it say that in the statutes?
Madam Chair, Section 203B.03 provides that any individual intentionally makes or signs a false certificate required by this chapter, which refers to the chapter that the absentee balloting provisions are in, is guilty of a felony.
Madam Chair, which I think just speaks to the need to make this change more.
I think, this was a provision also that the governor did not like. It seems to me that it would be helpful to make sure that everybody knows that they're committing a felony when they say they're going to be out of the, and it would be provable, I suppose, they're going to be out of the district or out of the precinct, and they stay home.
Senator Rust, it would seem to me, though, that if we're going to start warning people that they may be charged with a felony if they were going to vote by absentee and not be out of perhaps not be out of the precinct, but perhaps are just
would
concerned
have a chilling
that
effect.
There would be
chilling
a effect, snowstorm, for instance, or are concerned mm-hmm. their child won't pick them up to take them to the polling place, that it could really disenfranchise a number of voters. So I think
In B, it did say that there's an emergency, they could vote absentee.
If the governor declares it.
But
leading that.
I'm just, I bring that up just as a point of how absurd it is to not allow people to vote absentee because they choose to.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Fraser, or Senator Olsen.
Thank you. I'm also a supporter of early voting. What are your thoughts on how would that impact absentee balloting? I mean, obviously there would still be some absentee ballots because of what we just discussed with the overseas people and stuff, but do you see a dramatic drop in absentee balloting then?
Senator Olsen.
Senator Stephen.
I believe on Friday we're going to hear an early voting bill, and I think, it would be great if we could pass the early voting legislation because it would certainly cut down on the number of people who vote absentee. The idea being that if people really want to vote early for any number of reasons, that then they could vote early instead of absentee, either in person or by mail. So I think these proposals do sort of go hand in hand, but perhaps even more importantly, I think, is that we do try to pass legislation pertaining to early voting. But like I said, we're going to hear that on Friday.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, about the governor's opposition, I pointed out a number of times to the governor and others that his own party has, for a number of years, sent out flyers prior to the election, unsolicited flyers to their mailing list, encouraging people to vote absentee. And while the form that they attached to it has the four excuses checked, they also had on there the text. I remember Bill Cooper had a thing saying, sometimes it's not convenient to get to the polls on election day or something. It might be more convenient because of work or something else. And in effect, they were encouraging people to do this. And I suggested if they're going to encourage it, they at least ought to change the law to do this instead of opposing the law change. But
well, Senator Marty, I think, but just like some other provisions of bills that we had, what we're doing here, or what Senator Sieben is doing here in her bill, is making the practice or the law conform to the practice.
Right.
And we know that many, many people probably don't even know to start with that there are these requirements. They just fill out the application, send it in, and et cetera. So I think you're quite right. Senator Pavlos, did you have a question?
My question was about early voting, so thank you.
Ms. Fraser, did you want to speak to the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for taking my testimony. Our office is supportive of no-excuse absentee ballots. As the committee has already discussed, we believe that there are many Minnesotans who are already voting, even though none of the acceptable reasons or the reasons laid out in statute necessarily apply to them. But there are some Minnesotans who refuse to tell even that white lie. And so right now there's kind of unfair, there are some people that are willing to tell that white lie and some people that aren't. And it seems like we should just allow everyone to be honest and if they want to vote absentee to allow them to do so. We believe that in combination with an early voting bill, which I understand will be moving separately, but that early voting and no excuse absentee, we believe, work very well in tandem and would help offset any additional costs incurred. And so we think they work very well together. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there further questions for Senator Sieben or Ms. Fraser?
Madam Chair, we have two more testifiers.
Okay.
Ann Higgins.
Ms. Higgins?
Come up. Thanks.
you would state your name, please, for the record. We welcome your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. My name is Ann Higgins. I work at the League of Minnesota Cities on election issues. Years ago, the League did not support this approach because at the time we feared what we now have. And we didn't need to change the law to get where we are now. So my support now is for this change. We have seen the dramatic rise, and it's true.
That thing about making the law.
Yeah, the voters made the law change, yeah. and that's maybe how it should be. But more importantly, I think this is the transparency and the clarity that voters rely on. They want to have confidence that our election process is fair. I think at this stage, this would be fair. And election officials have said that the absentee voting process itself is difficult enough. And we've seen the difficulty that we have at the other end in interpreting the voters' activity. So hopefully, along with, as Senator Seidman said, the early voting proposal that you will hopefully see on Friday, this will be a combination of arrangements that will meet, hopefully, as many needs as we can for the voters. And I think that's what city election officials wanted you to understand, that that's what we want to try to do. So thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Higgins? Mr. Haney?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Haney. I'm legislative and political director for the IBEW Minnesota State Council. We have 13 local unions with the state council representing over 16,000 members literally in every house district in the state. This bill, we support this bill, and here's why. Many thousands of our members work for utilities. As such, they are subject to, emergency call-out at the drop of a hat. Maybe a very nice afternoon in the Twin Cities, Sunday before election. Meanwhile, tornadoes are ripping apart the distribution system in Des Moines, Iowa. They get a call that says, be at work 6 o'clock Sunday night, you're going to Des Moines. They're out of here, and they have no chance of absentee voting at all. There's no definition of what is reasonable within the statute. Is it reasonable to think that you may get called out of town on a storm repair job and not be able to vote on election day? I don't know. Nobody knows. An emergency is an emergency. There are thousands of other Minnesotans that are also subject to emergency call out for repairs for their work or for public service that also would be benefited by this particular bill. A personal story, my wife's a locomotive electrician. She called from work one day and says, I'll see you in a couple of days. What do you mean? I got to go to Pipestone. There's a situation down there I have to deal with. So she was gone. And if that had been election day, it would have been a real problem because they needed her there now. So it would also benefit in that kind of a situation. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Taney? Thank you both for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify either in support or in opposition to Senate File 853? Seeing no one come forward, Senator Seidman moves that Senate File 853 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee. All those in favor of that bill, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion rather. Opposed? The motion prevails. We now have Senator Pappas's bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have an author's amendment. A2. Chair.
Senator Pappas moves. Would you like to? We'll move the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Phyllis Kahn wanted to be here to kind of tell her story, but I think the House is still in session. But as I understand it,
Senator Pappas, it's not our custom to allow House members to testify at Senate hearings anyway.
Oh.
Sorry. I wouldn't have allowed it.
All
just
right.
Like, so, just so
maybe,
you know.
Maybe Senator
I may have
Seidman
allowed it.
Allowed.
Is that an arrest?
Then I will report you to the majority leader. And then understand your answer to him.
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, however, election issues do really election issues do relate to elected officials. You know, we author bills sometimes that have to do with elected issues, like I did with the access into apartment buildings.
Uh-oh.
But I understand your concern. She's not here anyway, so we avoided
the
conflict.
Don't
say Now, she's going to whisper in my ear. They're not going to let you testify, Phyllis. It's my understanding that from my conversation with Representative Kahn this morning is that her primary opponent did not actually live in the district. And so and that also happened to Representative Larry Haas, where they found out that his opponent also did not live in the district. And in both cases, I think they had to go to court to have that person thrown off, removed from the ballot. And so what this would do is it would provide a process where that if someone believes that someone actually doesn't live in the district where they're filing in, they could actually there could be a protest process where a filing officer would have to determine whether the address is correct or not. Then the second part of the bill, that's paragraph C, and then there's an appeal process in paragraph D, and then in paragraph E, we have exempted the judicial, any judges, county attorneys, or county sheriffs for security reasons. They still have to sign an affidavit that says they live in the district in which they're running in or the area in which they're running in, but their address and phone number, they don't have to provide those for public record.
Senator Pappas, right now, so we did not have to provide our residence address, for instance?
It's requested, but it's not required. I think most people think that it is because they asked for it, that they have to do it, but they actually don't. And he provided his address, right, but it actually ended up being the wrong address. I mean, the address where he lived was not in the district where he was running. And he didn't even know that himself until he went to register to vote and found out that he was in a different district.
Okay.
This will never happen again. And if you need any more explanation and you won't let Representative Kahn comment, then Mr. Bodern or Ms. Fraser are going to have to help me out here.
Well, just for the record, I'd like it to note that I said that I would allow Representative Kahn to testify, but I was overruled by my full committee chair.
Wait. Also a former House member.
Right. Well, Madam Chair, I would invite Representative Kahn to become a member of the Senate. And we know what she would have to do in order to accomplish it.
But did I explain it right, Mr. Bodern? You might want to fill in a little bit.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, the one thing I'd point out, I think listening to your explanation, on there are basically two deadlines for determining residence. Paragraph C deals with situations where the residency requirement has to be satisfied by the close of the filing period and establishes the process for reviewing that address if the filing official is requested to do so. And then if it is determined the address is not within, not represented by the office the candidate is seeking, you'll see on lines 12 and 13 of the amendment, then the filing officer must notify the candidate, and the name must be removed from the ballot for that office. And that can be done up to one day after the last day for filing for the office. And then the reference on line 13 to 204B.44 is that's existing law that allows an individual to petition a court for basically an error or mistake made by an election official for correction of that error. Paragraph D deals with situations where the residency requirement has to be satisfied on a date after the filings close. It does not provide any process for challenging the residency, or the similar process, I should say.
Madam Chair, are there any more copies of the amendment? Could I get another copy? That's right, she'll bring me one. Oh, thanks.
And Senator Pappas, the filing officer, is that who is that either wherever they're filing for office, so it's either the county auditor or the Secretary of State if they represent multiple counties?
Madam Chair, I believe that's correct.
Do you have any testifiers for your bill?
Only one that's not allowed.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas. I mean, Senator Rest.
Let's see, what was my question? Oh, I know. Did we adopt the amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Senator Pappas, this is probably not a really big concern because I don't think most candidates who file are concerned about having their home address published when they're first seeking office. But is there any way that later, if a candidate does not want that their home address listed publicly, it could be made private? And I bring it up because of some I've made efforts to keep my home address private for some things that happened to me personally, or not personally, but I think because I was a candidate where I wanted to keep my home address more private. So I have a P.O. box, for instance, that's publicly listed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, I understand that. I had a kind of a stalker for a while, too. It's not in the current law, I don't think. Well, you're right. It's not required in the current law. So you're right. This would require it.
Had you thought about that at all?
I hadn't.
And like I said, usually when you're just first filing for office, it's not an issue. But then sometimes after you are a candidate, it does become an issue where you may not want your address publicly disclosed. It's just something to think about.
So right now, you just say, Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, right now you just say I live in the district for which I am to be a candidate, period. That's all you're required to do.
Required. But usually people do fill in their address because it's on the form, right?
And are the forms usually then put on the website?
I don't know.
Ms. Frazier is shaking her head yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. She's going to come and help me.
Yes, Madam Chair, the forms are usually put on our website.
But after the filing period, could a candidate then change their address to, for instance, a P.O. box if they wanted to? I don't know how it would really change it because then your address was already made public, but I don't feel very strongly about it if no one else has any concerns. But I think it can become an issue, or it could be an issue for candidates who don't want their address publicly disclosed.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
But there might be a way that we could address that, but still having to provide the information to the filing officer to determine the validity of it. Mr. Barn, can there be a sentence or a clause that says if a candidate requests that the information not be made public, that, you know, it's subject to all these rules here, I mean, in terms of verification, but it at the candidate's request, it not be published or something?
Madam Chair and Senator Rest, I can attempt to put some language together that would do that. The one thing I'll point out, I think you might still need to make a trip to the Judiciary Committee.
Yes, I understand that.
Out of privacy, right.
Madam Chair, I think there are a few issues with that proposal, Senator Rest. One is that this is, the way that this is set up is that the filing officer would review the address to see if it was in the precinct if somebody made that request. Okay. So somebody would only know to make that request if the address was public to see if it was in the precinct or in the district or not.
Madam Chair, I hadn't I hadn't read that particular clause, and I was thinking that it was just the filing officer had a duty to verify every address, but your bill says only by a request do they need to take that on. So,
well, Madam Chair, that may be nice, but we didn't want to give that responsibility to the filing officer.
Right. No, I get it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
You could address that concern, though, if you, if it's a safety issue, you could address it by allowing them to keep it confidential and then just requiring the filing officer to review those particular private ones, since there's nobody in the public who could. Because it is, I mean, we do allow people to get driver's licenses. I think even, I don't know, Ms. Fraser, if they're allowed to vote, register to vote with a, with protecting their address. Because for domestic violence, I thought we've allowed that.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, there is a procedure so that individuals who fear for their safety can submit a signed statement to that effect and have their name removed from the public information list so that it's not on the list that candidates or parties would buy but is still in the statewide voter registration system and on the roster.
So, Ms. Fraser, if a candidate wanted to go to that extreme and they submitted one of those, that information, could that also apply to this? Or no? Probably not.
Madam Chair, I think that if a candidate submitted a separate statement that said, I fear for my safety, therefore I'm not putting my address on the form, here is my real address, that we could do that. The question is then how do you check? Or is the address available to somebody from the public who wanted to know so they would know whether the person lived in the district? One of the things we're trying to avoid is to address the issue that Representative Kahn and Senator Pappas are raising while also trying to not put another requirement on the filing officers of having to check every single address and only doing it in cases where there's a need.
Madam Chair, if it was only for the people who requested the privacy, it's not going to be more than one or two candidates a year. I mean, I can't picture any more than that.
Right.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, we can try to make that work.
I think we should.
Mr. Bonner, can you take another crack at it?
Let's see. Madam Chair, I think I'm going to need a moment to work in the second portion of that request. I think on page 1, line 5, after the period, you could add, the address and telephone number must be treated as, provided under this paragraph, must be treated as private data if the candidate requests the filing officer to do so. That's the best that I have at this time.
Mr. Bonner, I don't think we need to put their telephone number as private information, however, because if you're running for office, you need to have a phone number where people can reach you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bodern, I think that we would prefer that there, instead on the form they note address withheld for safety reasons or something, so that we can make all of the affidavits of candidacy public, and then they submit something separate that says, I fear for my safety, here is my real address. Instead of on some forms having to redact information before making it public. I mean, obviously I haven't had a chance to talk to the election staff about how they'd like to implement this, but that's my guess, is that it's easiest just to scan all of the documents in.
Mr. Bonner.
Well, Madam Chair, while he's thinking there, I don't think we should require the candidate to give a reason. I mean, I agree with the way, I think the way that you're speaking of doing it is the better thing to do. That is, everybody can see the one public form, and just a box has been checked that the candidate has requested that their address remain private. According to Minnesota statute, blah, 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 and not have to say that they're afraid. I mean, people could
right.
make could make political hay out of that. I don't think we want to do that. Just if they don't want it, then it's not.
And then if someone wants to still questions whether they live in the district or not, they could still request it, and
they
then
could
the
still
filing officer
it.
Could
say yes, they are.
Entertain it or figure it
yeah.
out. Senator Olstein.
Madam Chair, this isn't related to that. It's just on the amendment E. Why are we not requiring this for the county sheriff or county attorney or judicial office? Is it
Senator
for
Pappas?
The same kind of reasons we've been talking? Or?
Madam Chair, yes. They said there's a safety issue there, so they requested that. So they still have to sign an affidavit that they live in the district, but they don't have to provide their address.
Would that be what you're talking about? What Ms. Frazier was just kind of talking about for the other folks? Could that be the same form or?
Senator Pappas?
No, because it would be an exception.
No, because it would be a rare exception that other kinds of elected officials would want their address, whereas these are more routine. They have probably have a lot more enemies than we do.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people had to get them.
Mr. Bonner, have we given you enough time?
Madam Chair, I think I've changed at least the first part of the amendment to reflect what the committee wishes. On page 1, line 5, after the period, insert a new sentence that would read, the form for the affidavit of candidacy must inform the candidate that the candidate's address and telephone number must be treated as private data if the candidate prefers.
We were only going to do address, not telephone.
Excuse me. We can take that out. Then I think if the committee is still interested in doing that, I need to work on the second portion of that language that would require automatic review of affidavits of candidacy where that information has been publicly withheld.
Mr. Bonner, I don't think we want it to be automatically, where the filing officer automatically has to confirm it if it's kept confidential, but still only if someone requests it.
Then, Madam Chair, the existing language would work that way.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I just think that if the concern Ms. Frazier mentioned, nobody has reason to challenge it if they don't know what the address is, which is why it might make sense. I mean, this is going to happen once or twice a year, we assume. It's not going to be a major...
Right, but then why require the filing officer to check if it's not going to be an issue?
I guess we're not requiring it for the sheriff or judges or anyone else. So, I mean, I don't care. I just was saying that was a concern raised.
I'm sure I would imagine the situation, let's say, where somebody sees that there are three candidates in which county?
Washington.
Washington County that have... requested their address not be disclosed, and somebody calls up and says, I see these addresses aren't disclosed, can you verify for me that they actually live in the district?
Right.
And the filing officer can say,
raise more of a red flag.
Yes, they do, I've already checked it, without giving out the address. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing, without giving out the address, but just affirm that yes, this person does live in the district or the precinct or whatever it would be.
So are you suggesting then that the language say that they verify that address so that before somebody calls, they already would have verified that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, or you could do it either way on that regard. If somebody calls up and requests, then the filing officer can say, okay, I'll check it.
Mm-hmm.
Please know that I will tell you whether they are eligible to run for that office, but I will not be giving you their address. I mean, could still make it that way, but I think it would be unusual enough that somebody's opponent is going to, if their address is not listed on their affidavit, is going to call up and say, I want to make sure this person is a legal opponent, so can you tell me if they are?
Madam Chair.
I would. I mean, I think any reasonable person would do that.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, but the bigger issue, just to remind the committee, is that the address is listed, but the address is of a person who does not live in the proper district,
right.
And there's no way to get that person off the ballot short of going to court. And so this would allow a way to get the person off the ballot, and I think it also allows them, if there's still time, to move, right, into the correct district. No?
Mr. Bodden?
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas.
6 months ahead of time, right.
There is a there's a timing issue here, and I was trying to explain this earlier. In page 1, line 8, the deadline for requesting the filing officer to review the address is one day after the last day of filing for office. So the committee may wish to discuss the implications of putting the deadline for the challenge before the last day for filing for office or afterwards.
Mr. Bodden, Madam Chair,
Baptist.
What that would do then, correct me if I'm wrong, is it would allow that candidate to file in the correct district where they live. If they were informed one day, oh, no, it wouldn't, because it's after the last day.
They'd be on the ballot.
They'd be on the ballot, and then the request would come in at
That's
the very
That's a problem.
And
Madam Chair, the withdrawal period is 2 days.
Okay.
So this is during the first day of the withdrawal period, and there's still time to get the candidate's name off the ballot if they're not in the proper district.
But Ms. Frazier, is there time to get someone new on the ballot?
No. Madam Chair, no.
No.
Ms. Frazier, or Senator Rest.
So I don't know that your amendment accomplishes getting somebody off the ballot who doesn't belong on it.
Well, Madam Chair, I think it does accomplish that. What it doesn't leave is an opportunity for that individual to actually run in their correct district or for someone else to file because it's during the withdrawal period. So in order to do that, we would have to move that date up, but then there's still people who are going to file on the last day. So I don't see how it works, really. If someone is running in the wrong district where they don't live, then they're out of luck.
It's partially up to the people who are supporting that person to make sure they're living in the district.
Yeah, really.
Minor detail.
Minor detail.
So,
right.
Madam Chair, I'm confused about what triggers an incorrect filing to get someone's name taken off the ballot if right now, if it's not challenged, even though it's illegal, you have to go to court to get their name taken off. Does this say you don't have to do that?
Senator Pappas?
I don't know.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, the gist of the new language in the amendment is that the filing officer, if requested, has the authority to make the determination whether or not the address provided by the candidate is within the district. If the filing officer does make that determination, then lines 11 and 12 of the amendment require that the candidate is immediately notified and the name is removed from the ballot.
All right.
In effect, it becomes an administrative determination subject to judicial review.
Right.
Okay.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on Senate File 531, except for Representative Kahn?
Madam Chair, if I may, this language basically applies to legislators and to gubernatorial candidates. My understanding is that those are the two categories of candidates who have to maintain residence in the district for 6 months or longer, so who need to be residing in the district during the filing period. All other candidates would fall under paragraph D, and I'm not sure that there's a lot of utility to paragraph D. That I don't know if the committee wants to look at that, because there's no – paragraph D applies to other candidates saying they have to submit an affidavit at the time when they do have to reside in the district. But there's no real penalty at that point if either they don't file the affidavit or if they don't reside in the district, because the ballots are printed.
Ms. Frazier, would that – where do constitutional officers fit in?
The state.
They have to live in the state.
But that's the same as the governor, right?
Well, that's what she meant.
But you meant
Madam Chair, Mr. Bowden should perhaps review this statute, but we were looking at it yesterday, and it's really only the governor that is required to live in the state, I think, for a year. There's no similar requirement of other constitutional officers. So they probably have to live in the state like other candidates for 30 days, but are not required, do not have the same residency requirement as other candidates.
While Mr. Bonner is looking at that, is the committee comfortable with making the oral amendment that Mr. Bonner recommended before on lines 1.5?
Yeah. I can reread it and if you want.
The
if
privacy
you,
issue?
If you could please, right.
Madam Chair?
Right. Mr. Bonner, if you could please reread that.
Madam Chair and members, on page 1, line 5, after the period, the amendment would read, the form for the affidavit of candidacy must inform and allow the candidate that the candidate's address must be classified as private data if the candidate prefers.
On the amendment, Senator Pappas moves that amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed. Aye. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, Ms. Fraser suggested another change on 1.6, and that a registered voter in the state may request in writing that the filing officer review the address.
Senator Pappas moves that on line 1.6 after the word request, insert the words in writing on the amendment.
Madam Chair, I think you have to also add that.
That, in writing that, right.
Senator Pappas moves to insert the words in writing that. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed. Aye. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, interesting story from the court case is that Representative Kahn's primary opponent thought he was in the right district because there was redistricting in 2002. And so his address, he was actually redistricted out. And when he checked the Secretary of State's website, it said that they hadn't really updated it from redistricting. But he took that information. He'd missed that somehow. So he thought he was in the right district. And then he found out that where he moved to was in the wrong district. And then he offered to move back into the new the old district. And he wasn't allowed to do that.
Good.
So very interesting story.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rest.
I have one additional amendment to go with the language we just adopted, and that is on 1.7 to delete the word to, so that the sentence says a registered voter in this state may request in writing that the filing officer receiving the affidavit of candidacy review the address.
Senator Rest makes that amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The amendment is adopted. Mr. Bodern, can you clarify now about the constitutional officers?
Madam Chair, there's an additional subdivision in the same section this is coded in that has extra or additional requirements for candidates for statewide office, and the governor and lieutenant governor both need to provide information that they have been a resident of Minnesota for not less than 1 year, those candidates. And there are numerous other miscellaneous requirements, such as the Supreme Court justices affirming that they're learning the law and so forth.
Learned in law. And Madam
Senator
Chair.
Senator Pappas.
And then what about the other constitutional officers?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair and Senator Pappas. No other constitutional officers need to affirm that they have been resident in for that any extra period of time. There is a requirement, and maybe you mentioned this, I didn't hear it, senators and representatives have to affirm that they have resided not less than 1 year in the state and not less than 6 months in the district from which they seek election.
So, Madam Chair, yeah. Mr. Bodern, so Secretary of State and the auditor, they only have to live in the state 20 days before
and
the
election. And the Attorney General.
And the Attorney General.
Madam Chair, and you can find that language actually on page one of the bill in the existing law that's printed there. Clause three provides the what all candidates for office would have to
30 days.
Provide on their affidavit, and that's a 30-day period before the election.
So, Senator Pappas, to Ms. Frazier's point about subdivision D, do you have any comment on that? Or
subdivision
did you
D? I must have been reading the court case.
I think.
Or paragraph D? I'm sorry, on line 1.14. Ms. Frazier indicated that that may be unnecessary.
What it does is make that information public.
Because that, Mr. Bonner just reminded me that that paragraph makes the information public. So it may be unnecessary because the information already is going to be, no.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, I guess the only thing I would point out there, as the committee noted previously, there's no requirement to put the address on the affidavit. This would simply require a candidate to eventually do that at the time provided in paragraph D. It would be public information unless otherwise requested by the candidate. So there would at least be public scrutiny of that information.
Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, is this section only applies to state candidates, not local?
I believe that's right, Mr. Bonner.
Madam Chair and Senator Marty, I think this is, it's coded in the section that applies to all affidavits of candidacy.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Frazier.
I think the concern is that this requires that all local candidates file a subsequent affidavit of candidacy or affidavit that they reside in the district 30 days before the election, which is right when the absentee balloting period starts. It's a very busy time, and I'm not sure what this accomplishes, because there's no penalty for not filing this affidavit, and the ballots have already been printed, so there's no way at this point to kick the person off of the ballot. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly what it accomplishes.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, not wishing to seem argumentative, I guess I could think of a situation where candidate X has not provided their information on an affidavit of candidacy and refuses to do so, and the opponent could claim candidate X is afraid to provide that information and won't comply with the law that requires it. I certainly would agree there isn't any penalty applicable to it, but it is an additional layer of public review.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I do remember one case where a candidate for city council told the elections officials that they would live in the city by the time of the election, and and there was no way to know, and apparently the individual did not. And I think they had tried several years ago. I thought we had changed the law already to deal with it somehow, but I don't know when the absentee ballots are printed, but it seems to me that they were, whatever city it was trying to get permission to remove the name because they knew the person was not living there and had no intent of living there.
Senator Pappas? Chair, I really don't care about this. Maybe we should hear from the League of Cities if they think that's something that would be important to have, or we could delete it.
Well, it seems like Senator Marty made a good point for why we should leave it in. But, Senator Marty, did you want to add something else?
Madam Chair, the only other thing I was going to say is that in some cases it might be more, we use the word district in here, and if it does apply to local officials, it might be better to use the jurisdiction or something.
It doesn't. It only applies to legislators and the governor.
Not the whole thing.
Madam Chair, Senator Rust, only paragraph C applies to legislators and gubernatorial candidates.
I think it's confusing, Madam Chair, when it says for an office whose residency requirement may be satisfied as of a date after filings close, that
that opens up a whole nother can of worms, a whole nother category of candidates.
And that, an example of that would be somebody running for attorney general who lives in Wisconsin would not be precluded from filing in July as long as they moved to Minnesota by October 1st. Is that? And we should be able to know that, that they've actually done that, is what your paragraph D does. Madam Chair, Senator Marty, is that how you understand it too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we
just
should keep
another
it
layer of assurance.
Maybe we keep it.
Okay. Is there anyone who would like to testify on this, on the bill? Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 531 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. There's no more business before the committee, so the committee is adjourned.